Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najeau, and we're starting out the show today talking about black currants and why you may want to add some to your landscape. Our guest is Lily Hislop. She is the black currant and elderberry breeder for the Savannah Institute in Spring Green. She has a PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in plant breeding and plant genetics, and has worked in a variety of species, including sweet corn, pumpkin, miscanthus, and teosinte. Do you have black currants? What do you use the berry for? And what would you like to know about them? Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Jill. So glad to be here today.
Well, so glad to have you back. You know, last time you were on, we had lots of calls from people who have black currants, but not a lot of people really know about them. So before we start talking about them, why don't you explain what they look like first?
Sure. A black currant grows on a shrub that will at maturity get to be about 5.5 feet tall, maybe like in the 4 to 6 feet range. And black currants look like little black marbles that kind of have a galaxy quality to them. They're deep black with little speckles of starlight on them. And they're almost perfectly spherical.
Little speckles of starlight. I love that. That's very romantic sounding.
We got to romanticize the things we love.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. Now, I assume that the height varies by species. Is that correct?
Species and cultivar.
Okay.
So when we talk about black currants, we're mostly talking about Ribes nigrum, which is the European black currant. But there's about 27 varieties of species of Ribes native to North America, and there's about 300 species across the world.
Okay. So a lot. There's a lot to choose
yes.
from. Now, why did they kind of fall out of favor in our area?
So black currants and red currants, which are different species but are often lumped together, used to be culturally really important in the United States before the 1900s. They were grown on about as many acres as like raspberries are or blackberries are today. So like about 7,000 acres. People knew what they were. They were mostly brought over by European colonialists. And then the native varieties have been eaten for millennia, right? But in the early 1900s, there was, in the importation of black currants and then white pines, a disease was called found white pine blister rust. And white pine blister rust impacts the currants a little bit, like they get sick and they don't love it, but it kills white pine trees pretty badly. And at that time, we were really heavily investing in white pine as a timber crop, especially in New England in the United States. So the U.S. government put a blanket ban on everything Ribes that included the imported varieties and the native varieties. And they spent decades eradicating it with the Civilian Conservation Corps and this really deliberate like effort to remove it from farmers' fields and gardens and remove the native ones with herbicides and fire and things like that. And while we were doing all that, Canada developed resistant varieties. And we found that those eradication efforts kind of didn't work. And so they just quietly unbanned black currants in the 1966, but we kind of have lost it culturally after 55 years of a ban.
Okay, so there, it's fine now. There's no ban, so you can grow it and appreciate it. Can you, you can pick those right off the bush and eat them like a raspberry, blueberry type of thing, right?
You absolutely can.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ban in Wisconsin. There's still restrictions or bans in 12 states.
Okay.
But Wisconsin, there's no bans. And you can absolutely pick them right off the bush and eat them. They have no particular toxins. But you might not love the flavor if you haven't had it before. It
okay.
can be, I kind of compare it to like a blackberry and like juniper mixed together or pine.
Ah.
It has a pretty strong resinous flavor depending on the cultivar.
Mm-hmm.
You can also develop a taste for it. I certainly have. It's delicious to me, but it's pretty strong to other people.
And you can cook them, too, which we'll get into a little bit later. So you can use them in all kinds of really cool things to eat. But I wanted to talk to you specifically. You just got back from Europe not that long ago.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, they're really popular in Europe because that's where they some of them came over. So tell us what you saw.
So in Europe, black currants are way more widely cultivated and they're much more of a staple food. So like Ribena is a hugely popular drink in the UK specifically. And I would equate it to like lemonade or Sprite here in terms of how consistently you can find it and people are drinking it. And that's a black currant, not a shrub, it's a squash, a black currant squash, which is like black currant juice mm-hmm. and water kind of to dilute it. And like, for example, the purple Skittle in Europe is black currant flavored, not grape flavor. So kind of it's a pretty one-to-one change over where black currant is a much more common flavor there. And I went to the major black currant growing regions to see how they do it. Like, mm-hmm. how are they managing their farms? What equipment are they using to harvest? And what lessons can we learn in Europe and bring over to farms in the United States? So I went to the UK and Scotland particularly, and I went to France, and I went to Austria, and I went to Poland, and I did a little bit in Switzerland.
And as far as they're growing, are they doing it differently than what we are?
They sure are. at the moment, we have about 450 acres of currants, that includes both black and red currants, growing in the United States. And most of people who are growing currants on like a farm scale are growing less than half an acre. So they're kind of growing it as an additional row or a U-pick thing, but no one is growing to this. Like I was on 100 hectare farms, which is like 250 acres of just black currants. So they're growing at a way bigger scale and they're using big machines like over the row grape harvesters, to kind of treat this almost as a commodity, as a, the units are in half ton boxes, basically.
And so are you at the Savannah Institute looking towards Europe to get that large? Are you looking at the black currant as something else? Because I know the Savannah Institute is really interested in permaculture and perennial crops, that type of thing.
We really like black currants as a crop for, we focus on agroforestry specifically, mm-hmm. the idea of putting more trees onto farms. And we like black currants because they fit this like flavor niche that we don't have filled in the United States. Like a blueberry is delicious and great, but the flavor of a black currant is unlike anything you can kind of get in our domestic fruit production. It's often like cited as a flavor note itself in wine because there's kind of nothing else like it. So we're hoping that more people take on black currants as a crop to grow, but we don't want it to get to that commodity scale because we still want it to be something locally produced, something special that a farmer can get a good price for. We're especially encouraging black currants being grown alongside other crops. So on our farms, we have black currants and chestnuts planted side by side, or black currants and like heart nuts. I've also seen black currants and hazelnuts or something to do it alongside, mm-hmm. because that's another one of the great benefits of black currants is they don't really mind shade. You can get up to 65% shade and not really see much yield reduction, which is a great benefit if you are growing in diversified systems or want it for your garden underneath like a tree, stuff like that.
And we do have a lot of people that call in and say, hey, I would love to have some kind of fruit-bearing shrub or bush in my yard, but I do have a lot of shade, but no, not necessarily a lot, but some shade. And that is a great, great shrub to try. Do you need more than one to get the berries?
There are some that are self-fertile. I always recommend getting at least two varieties of any berry crop because mm-hmm. if they can cross-pollinate, they'll make bigger berries. And they'll probably put on better quality fruit or more fruit than they would otherwise.
Okay. I did not know that. So I learned something. I always learn something new. So, you know, that's what we're all here for. Let's go to the phones real quick. We have Mary Ellen in Lakewood with a question. Go right ahead, Mary Ellen.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have had black currants for probably 25 to 30 years. I have two bushes. I do not know the cultivar. I also have two red currants, and I love them both. One of my favorite things to do with them is jams and jellies. I find that most people around here do not know the flavor, and only people that have lived in Europe are excited about trying them. But my big question is, I've always just kind of pruned them as wait for spring and see what comes up and starts to, you know, leaf out, and then I just cut out the branches that are not doing anything. Is that the right method? And I've actually wanted to increase what I do with the more, like, shrubs of the black currant because I like them better than the red. And so I was wondering about, you know, do I need to put them close by where I already have them, or is it okay to put them someplace else? I can take your answer off here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary Ellen. Okay, so the pruning question is one that I have heard from 40 different farmers. I've heard 40 different answers. So it doesn't seem like there's a bad way to prune. I think pruning during the season is probably fine. My blanket recommendation is, well, no, I don't even have a blanket recommendation. It's kind of what's your situation and what's easy for you. For someone starting from scratch, I might recommend once you plant your bush, prune it to the ground for the first year, let it really focus on its roots. And then every year after that, prune out like any wood that's older than 3 or 4 years old, anything that's at an angle more than 45 degrees towards the ground, because then it's just going to get heavy with fruit and touch the ground anyways. But I've seen people who kind of treat it as like a brain, and they remove the left half 1 year and then the right half the other year. And then I've seen people who cut it down to the ground all the way every 5 years or every 10 years. I've seen farmers who never prune them and just replace the plant every 10 years. One farmer said to me, there's no way to over prune. So kind of whatever your heart says. And if you think you're taking out too much wood, you're probably not.
Wow. Well, that is interesting. And also says that these are very resilient plants.
They're very resilient plants. And if you are growing a cultivar that you are allowed to propagate freely based off of the rules of the cultivar, mm-hmm. you can just stick those prune cuttings directly in the ground and they'll probably make a new fruit. They're really hardy as a plant.
Wow. Love it. Love it. Now, she had just mentioned the red and the black. So flavor-wise, there's a difference between the red and the black?
Absolutely different. Okay. Yes. If a black currant is a blackberry and a pine tree mixed together, mm-hmm. red currants to me are just pomegranate on a bush without all the work.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting.
And like white currants, which are the same species as red, mm-hmm. it's just that with kind of the acidity and tannicness toned down a little bit.
Okay. And those are called sultana, right? In the UK? Am I wrong?
Oh, I don't know. Okay. Probably not, but okay. Maybe. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, that's what happens when you watch the Great British Baking Show. You get confused with
stuff.
They always say sultanas, and I would just assume that they were currants. But anyway, we'll have to look that up. I guess there's a place where you can do that.
You've unlocked a little. Do you mind if I go on a brief aside?
No, go right ahead.
So you'll sometimes see currants in the baking aisle here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Those are often called Zante currants. Those are grapes. Those are little raisins from the Corinth variety of grape that's grown in the Corinth region of Greece.
Oh, well, that's good to know. So those of us mm-hmm. who have tried that, that's not a currant. So don't base anything on
that. It's not a currant. It's a grape. They're both good. Unfortunately, the name came from the grape first.
Okay.
We're like, oh, these kind of look like Corinth grapes. We'll call them currants, which is the same thing that happened with pepper and pepper, you know?
Sure, sure. Okay, well, thank you for that confusing note, Lily. We appreciate mm-hmm. that. Sue in Madison emailed us. She was looking for a native shrub to grow in partly shady conditions that would attract wildlife. And someone told her that black currants would do well. But when she found some at the local garden stores, the information labels all said that they require full sunlight. Is there a native black currant that can tolerate partly shady conditions, or maybe a cultivated variety?
Okay, if you want a native black currant specifically, I'm going to recommend a couple different cultivars, specifically Crandall or Missouri Giant or Black Topaz are all, I think, Ribes odoratum, which is a native black currant, sometimes called a clove currant. You'll also see clove currant or golden currants. And those are all black currants that will produce fruit. The fruit is really tasty and it might attract more wildlife. And so those are things to try. I think while they might produce best in full sun, all of these are going to produce pretty well in partial shade, at least because they're forest-dwelling plants and that's where they originated from.
Okay, that makes sense. Go ahead, Sue. Find some of those. Is there a good place for her to look for more information about black currants? Should they go to Savannah Institute?
The Savannah Institute website has a black currant growing guide and other information on black currants in general. And that would be a great place to start for looking at very basic information about black currants specifically. If you're looking for plants, Young's has some black currants. And then I highly recommend One Green World and Fruitwood Nursery and Peaceful Heritage Nursery are kind of my go-to for a garden level amount of plants.
Okay. And we do have a link to the Savannah Institute if for some reason you want to go to wpr.org/garden talk first. We'll get you right there too. We're talking to Lily Hislop. She's the black currant and elderberry breeder at the Savannah Institute. If you've got a question about black currants or a comment, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email. That's talk@wpr.org. Okay, so let's talk about if people want, I mean, you're hoping for farmers, and is there a market right now, or are you hoping to create one or both?
Little bit of both. There's a chicken and an egg situation whenever
Sure.
you're introducing a new crop, where like we want to scale the markets at the same time we're scaling production so we don't get too unbalanced in one or the other. There is a demand for black currants. We have some buyers like up in the Northeast who say, I would take a truckload of plant of berries every week if you had it for me. But that's one person, right? So we
Yeah.
also need to like, if we get to a place where we're producing 10 truckloads, we got to make other people want it too.
Sure.
So a little bit of A and a little bit of B. But we're seeing growth and interest around black currants, which is very exciting. It was listed as the McCormick flavor of the year. So there's been like buzz about that, and I've been seeing it on more restaurant menus, which is always very exciting for me.
Yeah, for sure. And that's when we had you on last year, was when they announced that. So, have you been getting a lot more inquiries from farmers about growing them?
I've been getting a fair amount of inquiries and people reaching out, being like, I heard about this, or I was on a podcast recently called Gastropod, talking about the history of black currants. And I have had some people email me of like, I heard you on this podcast. I didn't know this existed. I'm so excited. There's a breeding program. So it's been really cool.
That's wonderful. Oh, okay. We've got a question from, or a comment actually, from Cheryl up in Bessemer, Michigan. Go ahead, Cheryl.
I just called to tell you that black currants make the best wine. My boyfriend makes wine out of them. And he goes to the gas station every, he's retired, right? He goes to the gas station, and all the guys at the gas station told me that's the best wine. And I
Okay.
made jelly out of it too. But I dug up all these plants, and I'm not kidding, they went like crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you're saying, right, Lily?
Yeah, they can be really happy depending on the circumstances, and they do make a really good wine.
So is there a downside on these plants?
They can get certain diseases, especially white pine blister rust is the one that I'm really concerned about and want to make sure we keep under wraps. I don't want to make the timber industry mad and get like people breathing down my neck. So I recommend only planting resistant varieties. My breeding program has five varieties that are currently available. They're all white pine blister rust resistant. And we have two varieties that are available to the home gardener kind of scale, called Savannah Zing and Savannah Zap. And those are both great currants, both white pine blister rust resistant. One of them, Savannah Zap, isn't appropriate for a farmer because it's a really spreading plant and you can't harvest it with machines. You can only harvest it by hand. And Savannah Zing gets a disease called cane dieback, which is like a fungal disease that shows up when the plant is stressed. And it doesn't kill the plant, but it will reduce your yields if you have it. And in a farmer's field, the plant's more likely to be stressed than in a nice cushy backyard, for example.
Okay. Do you get to name these varieties?
I do. It's the funnest part. I have a very fun job already, but naming this is like my favorite part. So for the future releases from the Savannah Institute, we have this electric Savannah naming scheme because currants and currant and like there's such a like zingy like flavor and they're so like kind of surprising and shocking. So the first two are Zing and Zap, and then the future ones will use words like bolt and ohm and voltage and things like
that.
Oh, sure.
I love that. Well, it's really nice that you've got that settled, so it's not going to take a lot of different debates once you start doing this. Mm-hmm. And where are they available?
You can get them from Canopy Nursery, which is our nursery spinoff, if you want more than 25 plants of each. but if you want only one or two plants, you can get them from Peaceful Heritage Nursery and One Green World and Food Forest Nursery. Mm-hmm. And Food Forest Nursery did a very sweet write-up about these varieties and like their traits and why they're beneficial. And if you look up, like I tested a Google prompt, if you test up best black currants Food Forest Nursery, it'll link you to that article.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'll have to look that up just to see. I actually would like to add one of these to my landscape. I don't know if I've got room for two, though. That's the problem. But if I do one, am I still going to get something?
Yeah, you'll still get something.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. One of my objectives for my breeding program is I'm breeding for really small scale plants so they can be grown in containers on backyards.
Ooh.
So we'll see how that goes.
How do they do over the winter then?
They are very winter hardy as plants go. Mm-hmm. They can get down to -40, easy peasy. The only thing that you really need to be concerned about in terms of temperature is once the flowers come online, they don't want to go under 28 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So like a little bit of a frost. So if you have flowers on your bush and a frost is coming, you might want to cover them up for the night.
When do they usually flower then?
Beginning in mid-May.
Okay. So that's not too bad. It's pretty
reasonable.
It's
not too bad, but I did lose my field from frost this year.
Did you? Oh my gosh. So that sets you back, doesn't it?
It's very location dependent. So like my breeding field is in an incredibly windy site that gets really cold versus our farm up the hill that's doing black currants and hazelnuts didn't have any impact at all. So I was conveniently going to be in Europe during the currant harvest anyways. So I didn't really miss much this year.
Oh, well, that's good. That's nice. When do the berries come then?
The berries are going to come in beginning to mid-July.
Okay. And how do you know when they're ripe?
You know when they're ripe because you try a couple and you learn what it tastes like, unfortunately. You want a deep black berry, but it can be deep black and unripe or deep black and overripe. If it starts to look squishy, it's probably overripe.
Okay.
But you just got to like learn it by taste. It's kind of the best.
Okay.
One of the farms that I was at was like, I was asking everyone, when do you know to harvest? And he says, we bring out the harvest machine and we try. And if it doesn't work, we try a different day.
Okay. Well, that's scientific. and what about birds and things? Do you have to worry about the animals?
I think with European black currants, you don't have to worry about animals too much. They don't seem to love the flavor because of that kind of resinous quality. I'm coming from a background in blueberries. It's not nearly as much damage as blueberries will get.
Okay, our guest is Lily Hyssop. We're talking about black currants. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a sec.
And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. In the second hour of the show today, Lisa Johnson is back with us to take your general gardening questions. We're going to talk about tomatoes to begin with, and then who knows where we're going to go. Hope you can stay with us. Right now, we're talking about black currants. So if you've got a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, we take emails. That's talk@wpr.org. And Grant emailed us asking, how do red and white currants differ when baking or cooking with them? And can they be used whole in bread or other types of doughs? He said that at a local farmer's market, he sees what are called champagne currants, which are very pale and similar in color to champagne. Do they differ from red and white currants? Lily?
Okay, excellent question. Thank you, Grant. So in red and white currants, you can bake with them as you would with black currants. I think the flavor is going to be pretty significantly different. I think red and white currants lend themselves well to really light summery dishes, things that are paired with meringues, for example. But I don't see why you couldn't cook them in bread. I'm certainly not a bread scientist, though. If the bread comes out terribly, I'm sorry. But they could add a nice, delightful pop to things, or cooked down, a nice little burst of sweetness. Champagne currants are in the red and white spectrum. There's also pink champagne currants, which is a pink currant, which is, you know, if they're the same species, it's all a matter of varying pigmentation. And yes, they have a beautiful light flavor. They're a gorgeous berry. They kind of look like fish eyes, but said like, you know, complimentarily. They have this beautiful translucent skin where you can see the seeds through them. They're really lovely.
So sort of like a gooseberry-ish kind of transparency?
Like a gooseberry. Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
If you imagine a gooseberry, but 5 times smaller, maybe.
Okay. Now, gooseberries and currants are related somehow, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Also, within the Ribes genus,
okay.
Gooseberries are usually Ribes uva crispa, but some others, like there's native gooseberries
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. But currants don't have the thorns, do they?
Yeah. I'm not allowed to breed with gooseberries because my team doesn't want to work with the thorns.
I don't blame them. I made the mistake once.
They're pretty mean.
Yes. Gooseberries are great, except those darn thorns. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you can really get scratched up on those. So I understand their thoughts on that. And we've got a call from Kathleen in Carmel, Indiana. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Hi, yes, thank you. I wanted to ask your guest, I planted 3 American black currant bushes about 5 years ago, and they're big and tall, but they've never produced any berries whatsoever. So last fall, I thought maybe I needed, you know, females or males or what have you, and so I planted 2 additional ones nearby, and the 2 little ones each produced, you know, a handful of berries, but still no berries on the big ones. Is there any way I can get the original large ones now to provide some berries?
Okay, that's a great question. Are you getting flowers on the big plants?
No, only leaves.
Okay, so we're not getting flowers, so it's not even having a chance to pollinate, so it's not an issue of cross-pollination. There's something about the plant itself that's unhappy. And, you know, if it's a plant, it's going to want to produce fruit at some point in its life cycle. So I'm not going to say it's a fruitless plant. Maybe try like a hard pruning on them and like cut them down to the ground and give them a fresh reset. And maybe check out your soil nutrients and see if you're have the right, like enough nitrogen and all the the minor minerals. And are you watering them?
I'm not. We did have this year a very wet spring, which actually produced verticillium wilt elsewhere on my acreage. Very upsetting. But I think they are getting enough water, but I know they do probably prefer more. So maybe more water too?
Maybe. My general recommendation is like 1 inch of water a week, whether that's from rain or irrigation. But if you had a wet spring, you would expect it to have flowers. So that's an interesting puzzle you have. Yeah, maybe a hard prune and checking in on the soil.
Okay, well, good luck, Kathleen. That's very frustrating, especially when the new ones are doing it, but the old ones aren't. Okay, thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate that. So Graham emailed. He says that black currant is also one of the Starburst flavors in the UK.
That is true.
I love it. I love it. So speaking of food, you had an event, right? Tell us about this event that you were using black currants in.
So I am absolutely, totally lucky to be on a great big team at the Savannah Institute, and we have a commercialization department that's trying to produce the markets for these berries, other than me just making plants and being like, anyone want these? I don't know. So we had an event last week where we brought together chefs from around the Midwest, and we gave them a bunch of black currants, and we said, make something. How does this inspire you? And there were so many beautiful dishes at this. There was a chocolatier who brought in different chocolates with black currant jams and ganaches. There was a mixologist making a lovely cure royale with a cassis she made herself and kerns of vodka. There was salads where they had pickled black currant berries on top of the salad. One of the chefs made this smoked beef dish that was thinly sliced and then served with a black currant barbecue sauce. There was black currant powder used as a rub on a beautiful heritage breed chicken, black currant mustards, black currant and blueberry tarts, black currant used to bake into rye bread, and then lots of jams and molasses and teas made out of the leaves. And then I made a ice cream, a goat cheese and coconut ice cream with a black currant and sage ripple in it. So It was a really fabulous event, and there's so many good ideas there.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so next time you're on, you're in the studio and you're bringing some samples. Wow, that sounds amazing. So, you know, you're talking about the Savannah Institute, and we've talked about the Savannah Institute a number of times on the show because it's really cool. But for those who maybe aren't familiar, tell us what you're doing over there.
So our objective is to get more trees onto farms, especially in the Midwest where we have so much monocultural row cropping plants. And we do that in every way that's kind of needed. So in addition to breeding crops that are adapted for this style and adapted for the Midwest, we work on black currants and elderberries, and we breed hazelnuts and chestnuts and black locusts and persimmons. We also do environmental service, ecological service science, looking at soil and biodiversity. We have a technical assistance team who assist farmers in planning out their farm transition and where they want all the species to go and how to execute that and how to get funding for that. So look at the TAP program if you are a farmer who's interested in that kind of service. We run a lot of events. Like there's an event up at Herbster, Wisconsin, tomorrow at the Elsewhere Farm. We have a great farm network where we connect agroforestry farms together and help them help each other through peer learning. We have online education through our YouTube and through learnagroforestry.org. We also have our commercialization team, and we have a network of demonstration farms where you can go literally to the farm and see agroforestry in action and how it kind of looks.
Mm-hmm. Really a great resource. And even for people who are just backyard gardeners too. Like you said, with the black currants, you have information about that. So great resource. And just if you're interested, check out the website. There's lots of really cool stuff out there. So check that out. You mentioned that you also do elderberries. That's also in your corner of the Savannah Institute. So talk about elderberries. That's another one that we don't hear a lot about.
Yeah. So we don't hear about black currants because there was a ban and we have dozens of years of kind of missingness in our culture. And we don't hear about elderberries a lot because they kind of haven't been domesticated yet. Indigenous people have used elderberries for also thousands of years, but not in a way that kind of produces a bush fruit that's easy to harvest and easy to eat. They all require hand harvesting. They're kind of a big and sprawling plant, and they also need processing to make them into an end product. So my job with elderberries is to kind of get them a little more domesticated, have them ripen evenly, have them not fall off the bush when they're ripe, have them in a like form that's easier to harvest, and eventually we want to be able to machine harvest them so that we can scale up their production. But they're a beautiful plant and they make such beautiful flowers that can be a great flavor that can be used for syrups and teas and all sorts of. One of the farmers I work with makes a beautiful dried elderflower cookie where the flowers are baked into the cookie. And then the berries are great and useful for syrups or very popular for food coloring right now, especially as we move away from synthetic food colors. So there's a lot of potential. But basically, every elderberry cultivar on the market right now is just a wild selection. Someone found it next to their chicken coop and they liked it.
So how long does it take? I mean, I know it varies, but it's a long process of breeding for all of these things that you were talking about, isn't it?
I'm in this job, I'm just a glorified bee with decision-making powers. I make crosses between two parents that I think will be a good match. This one has really big berries and this one has a good flavor. And I cross them together and then plant their babies and see which baby is the best. And the whole process takes about 15 years, especially if you're being really careful, which I want to be. I want to make sure these plants are tested in a wide variety of places and that they actually produce a really high quality plant with high quality fruit. And when you buy a Savannah, variety, you know you're getting a good plant.
So how
I do this also with the help of a number of farmers around Wisconsin and Illinois, where I recognize that I'm one person who has my own opinions and I'm not the one who's growing these professionally. So I give farmers seedlings and I say, all right, here's a bunch of plants. Just tell me which one you like. And they can help me select and take plants onto the next round, as does the public. On August 13th, which is next Thursday, we'll be having a public elderberry you pick out in Spring Green, where I invite the public to come out to my breeding field, harvest all the elderberries they want, as long as they tell me which plants they liked.
Oh, well, that's a great opportunity. Does someone have to
Oh, it's so fun.
register for that, or they just come on out?
It's a free event, but we do have limited spots. So on the Savannah Institute Eventbrite, you can sign up there.
Oh, what fun. I'm sorry it's so far away from me because I would really love to check that out. I love it. We do have a caller here. Keith in Green Bay, go right ahead.
Hi. Yes, this is a very interesting program. I'm just loving having you do this. I have a little small farm west of Green Bay near Pulaski. It's 5 acres, and it was an old 8-year-old horse pasture. It's a century farm in our family. And what can we do with 5 acres? What we can plant agroforestry. How do I get involved? And I think you just answered that question about all the events, but I'm excited. Thank you for having this topic.
Thank you,
I'm so
Keith.
glad. Please join our farm network team, like our agroforestry farm network, and get involved and meet other people in your area. I can name a couple different farms up near you who are also doing agroforestry, and absolutely.
So is that a list on your website, Lily, that he could
Yes, if
find?
you look up Savannah Institute Farm Network, you should be able to find a page on the info and a place to sign up to get more information.
And you have an email too, don't you? Or was I?
I have an email.
No, I mean
If you
an
have
email for Savannah Institute.
you can ask general questions to the Savannah Institute at info@savannainstitute.org. Savannah does not have an H because we're after the Oak Savannah biome, not Savannah, Georgia. And if you email a general question there, our team will figure out who it's going to be best to go to.
What about a newsletter? Is there a newsletter or something like that
There
also?
is a newsletter. You can
Okay.
also sign up on our website. It's not too egregious. It's like once every quarter or so.
So you get lots of information and news about events that you can maybe attend, news like that. So definitely something you might be interested. Again, it's Savannah with an H at the end. So don't make the mistake like
no,
I
No, Savannah
always,
with no H.
With no H, sorry. See, I made the mistake again. It just, yeah, you think you'd learn. Let's talk a little bit about the nutritional value of currants, too. I mean, they're good for you, right?
They are good for you. They are pretty packed with vitamin C and anthocyanins and the associated antioxidants, and they have a lot of different minerals in them. My general rule is the most like healthful berry for you is the one you're willing to eat. So I'm trying to thread that needle between nutrient dense and also delicious. Mm-hmm. But black currants are so unlike any other fruit. They're pretty dang good, especially as a jam.
Colin emailed and he said he heard that black currants can help the eye produce more tears. Is there any truth in that?
Oh, that's a great question. I haven't heard that one specifically, but maybe.
Yeah, but I wouldn't suggest like putting black currants into your eyes. I'm assuming they processed in some sort.
Probably not.
Yeah, who knows?
As a fruit eaten, you can also use the leaves and make that into a tea. A lot of people really like that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very interesting Finnish soft drink that I absolutely will not bother trying to pronounce, but it combines lemon and the black currant leaf and then like bread yeast to get a sparkling beverage. And I thought that one was very yummy when I tried it.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. Elizabeth emailed and was wondering when the container grown black currants might be available.
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so the container grown black currants will probably be available, if I do my job well, in 2035.
Oh, golly. Okay. That's a long time to wait.
I know a lot of people who've had success with cultivars that are already on the market and growing them in containers. Mm-hmm. I think because containers have more exposure of cold to the roots, you might want to protect those a little bit more since they're not specifically adapted to that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the varieties that's particularly small and might be good for that is Benserac, which comes out of Scotland. But Benserac isn't white pine blister rust resistant. So if you're an area of concern, one of the things you can do if you want to grow that or any other non-resistant variety is some researchers have found good results in doing mineral oil sprays every 2 weeks from like August through October, which is the peak season for it. And that can help suppress the, it's a fungus that wants to complete its life cycle on currants and pine trees. So you're trying to inhibit the spread of those spores onto the next round.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, these spores are very good at traveling from the currants to the pine trees. They can travel more than 1,000 feet really easily. And from the pine tree to the currant, they can travel up to like more than 300 miles. So
wow.
If you get white pine blister moss and you control it, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll spread it, mm-hmm. but you might get it no matter what.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. What does it look like? So someone might know if they have it.
It shows up on the underside of the leaf in late summer and fall, and it looks like Cheeto dust.
Okay.
Or like Cheeto dust that's been burnt. So it's like a little orange pustules that then mature to like a brown pustule mm-hmm. later in the season. And it will show up on the underside of the leaf first, and then as it gets worse and worse, it will show up on the top side too.
So if you do find you have it, at that point, what do you do?
If you do find you have it, assess your personal risk and see what trees you have in the area that you're concerned about spreading to, because maybe you have a homestead that's surrounded by like 30 acres of corn on all sides, and maybe you just don't care, mm-hmm. or maybe you have resistant white pines planted, which also exists. But you can manage it by spraying it with mineral oil every 2 weeks. You can also remove infected leaves, and you could consider taking those plants out and replacing them with resistant ones if you are particularly want to be cautious about this.
Okay.
In general, red and white currants don't really get white pine blister rust and don't really spread it. And the native varieties, the native species will vary from species to species on if they get it or not. Some will, some won't.
Okay. Nina emailed us, Brick Cider in, that's B-R-I-X, Cider in Mount Horeb, made a fabulous hard cider batch flavored with elderberry and called it the Pollinator. In the 7 years she's worked there, it's still his favorite, or her favorite, absolute favorite. Brick's also used currants in a cider they called Pluto. So,
oh, delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Apparently they're
experimenting. One of the things we love for black currants is it makes other fruits pop more because it's just like such an intense fruity flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So like when the chef made the blueberry tarts, he added only a little bit of black currant. It didn't taste overpoweringly like black currant, but it tasted very much like blueberries. It really brought out all those fruit notes, and I thought it was a fabulous pairing.
Ah, that's a definite useful thing right there to highlight the other flavors. So that's pretty cool. So again, just give us some reasons why people would want to have a black currant in their yard.
If you like the flavor already, if you have friends who like the flavor who want to talk you into it, or if you want to develop a new skill, such as enjoying the flavor of black currants, you might like this. They are a hardy plant that can grow pretty easily and ideally without a whole lot of tending, though I really recommend managing the weeds, especially for the first 2 years as the plant gets established.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's in the ground and happy, it should be producing fruit really consistently for you for decades.
Oh, decades. Well, that's good to know.
The oldest plants that I've seen are 25 years and we're still producing really strongly. So I don't know what the end cap is on these plants.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that you know, you can trim them back. Is that done in the fall or in the
spring? I would recommend mostly doing it when it's dormant. So okay. Sometime in the winter, whenever mm-hmm. is convenient for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people who cut back branches selectively during the summer, and the plant seems to be okay.
Okay. And then one more time, the elderberry event that you've got coming up, when and where is that?
That will be on Thursday, August 13th, out in Spring Green at our Valley Farm. Earlier in that day, there's also an event called Roots in the Right Place, Windbreak Design Benefits and Establishment. So that's from 1 to 3, and then the elderberry you pick is from 4 to 6, if you want a double agroforestry action event. And then if you're interested in the Savannah Institute broadly, we have our open house October 10th that will be out at our Spring Green campus at our main demonstration farm. There's tours, there's food, there's live music. It's a great time.
And there's always something going on. You guys always have something going on. So go to the website, right? Which is Savannah mm-hmm. Institute without the H.
SavannahInstitute.org, /events. And we especially put on a lot of events in the summer. So there's like 12 that I could have mentioned, but here's the highlighted three of
just
there's an
three.
Event tomorrow in Herbert, Wisconsin. And then next week out in Spring Green, and then our open house out in October.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us again, Lily. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on what's going on out there. So if there's something exciting, more exciting even now, let us know and we'll have you back. So we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
You bet. Our guest has been Lily Hislop. She is the black currant and elderberry breeder at the Savannah Institute, and we really appreciate her being with us. We also appreciate that Lisa Johnson is going to be back with us in just a little bit. We're going to talk about tomatoes with her to begin with, but of course, Lisa is with the Extension, so she can answer pretty much all of your questions because she always has a library behind her of all kinds of books that she just looks through if she has a question she can't answer off the top of her head. And also a reminder that we're going to be at the State Fair, the Lee Rayburn Show, on Monday at the Grand Champion building. So if you want to come out and say hey, Lee and I will be there and some other people from WPR. So we'd love to say hi. So please think about stopping out. We'll see you there.